As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast. Gab Marcotti is on a mini break in Padstow with his strong footbally opinions. So it is left to me, Max Rushton, to fill in with some anodyne, sit on the fence, lowbrow thoughts, but delivered in a vaguely friendly way. On today's pod, Newcastle score 6 goals. No one saw that coming. Jurgen Klopp's debut was a goalless draw. No one saw that coming. And Chelsea won a game. No one saw that coming either. Also, we'll answer the following questions. Can any of West Ham, Leicester or Crystal Palace actually stay anywhere near the top four? No. Can Big Sam turn Sunderland around? I don't know. And was Michel Platini peering through the window at the Euro playoff draw, wondering what might have been? With me today, we have, I have scripted here, James, Ipswich legend James Scowcroft. Are you happy with that?
That's very kind of you.
How are you normally introduced?
Can't say on air.
Okay. Well, we'll go with legend. My second footballing man crush after Gylfi Sigurdsson, Julien Laurent, is here. Julien, how are you?
Very good, thank you, mate.
I met your wife. But not in a sort of salacious way. Oh. at Arsenal. And she said, I'd like you on the game. And I said, I love Julien Laurent. And she said, I'm Mrs. Laurent. And I was jealous. How are you?
Very good, my friend. Good to have you on.
And on the phone, in a car, on the M25, Matt Hughes. How are you, Matt?
Very good, thanks. Yourself?
I'm good. Why could you not be bothered to come and sit with us?
I didn't want to get too close.
I understand that. Where are you driving to, Matt Hughes?
I'm going to see Arsene Wenger, head of Arsenal, Champions League game against Bayern Munich tomorrow. I expect him to be in quite a good mood for one.
Are you going to ask him any stinging questions?
Well, the question is Peter Cech going to play in goal? I hope the answer is yes, otherwise there'll probably be a riot in North London tomorrow after their previous Champions League tie.
I spent the whole of that day just before the game doing Drive on TalkSport and telling everyone how David Ospina was quite a good goalkeeper. Well, presumably he must be quite a good goalkeeper. Am I wrong, Julien?
You're not wrong. It's just that it was a bad day for him. It was a really bad day. And I think, obviously, the decision of playing him ahead of Sedge, who had a bit of a calf problem, backfired badly on Arsene Wenger.
Matt, what junction are you on?
About junction 17 now, so should be there in about half an hour, hopefully.
Okay, so by the end, you may just be sat in the car park talking to us.
Well, by the end, I'll have Arsene Wenger on the phone to talk to you, so you never know. I'm sure he wants to talk to Julien.
That is a way to tease people to keep listening to this. And if you weren't talking to us, what kind of power ballads would you be listening to in your Fiat Uno?
Well, I wouldn't be listening to TalkSport because you're not on it at the moment. So, yeah, it would probably be, I don't know, a bit of REM, a bit 90s rock.
Well, would you choose Out of Time or Automatic for the People?
Out of Time.
Yeah, that's a great album.
Before they went mainstream.
You liked them before they were good.
It's got BBC4 on, really.
You're a pioneer. Right, should we talk about football, chaps? Well, let's start yesterday. Newcastle scored 6 goals. Julien, how did that happen?
I'm not so sure. I think the first thing is...
No, they definitely did.
They did, yeah. They did. I'm not sure how it happened, but I just think that they're not going to face such a bad defence every weekend, which was good for them to take advantage of it, because I thought Norwich defending was just, you know... In terms of confidence, before the derby as well, it was really good to score 6 goals and to get that first win that Sunderland is still looking for example. And I just think that Wijnaldum and Sissoko and Mitrovic played well together, Perez as well, in a way. I'm not sure that 4-4-2 formation is one for the long term, because, again, against better teams than Norwich, better organised and just better teams, I think they're going to get well too exposed. But in fairness, a very, very important win for McLaren as well.
James, as an Ipswich legend, delighted to see Norwich ship 6.
We was. It's quite funny, actually, because I coach in Ipswich Academy and we went to Nottingham yesterday, and on the A1 we had several Norwich fans going up to Newcastle giving their thoughts to us, and on the way back they were not quite so jubilous as well. I think if reading Alex O'Neill just said, I don't think he's going to play like that again. I think he's been a little bit too adventurous, and it was a big lesson learned for Norwich, but it's a massive win for Newcastle to win a game and to win that emphatically as well. Score six goals, doesn't matter who it's against, especially in the Premier League. Yeah, it's a big feat.
Matt on the M25. It could have gone either way, bizarrely, that game, couldn't it?
Well, Alex Neil said it could have been 8-8 afterwards, which is probably a bit of an exaggeration. But, yeah, Norwich did have chances. Good for Newcastle. Pleased to see McLaren. There were signs earlier in the season that he was doing some good work and he brought, you know, a slightly improved atmosphere to the club. They just weren't getting the results. Now they've got an opportunity. They've got the derby next week in Sunderland. After that, they play Stoke, Bournemouth, Leicester and Palace. There's five decent fixtures. If they can go unbeaten in that, maybe win two or three games, that will really get them up to the table and get their season started.
Julio Sissoko looks... I mean, he looked brilliant yesterday.
He did going forwards, because obviously defending, I don't know what happened in the first half, but he just didn't fancy it. So he decided before the game, probably in that first half, I'm not going to trail back, I'm not going to defend, I'm just going to let them attack on my right-hand side. He did better in the second half. I think he's a lovely little player. He's very versatile.
Very patronising.
No, but because, you know, we see him with France as well, and there's a lot of people on Twitter said to me, but how on earth is Sissoko in the French squad? And I think he's a very... useful player to have in the squad, you know, even at national team level, because, you know, he can play in different positions. He's someone who works for the team. Again, not too much defensively yesterday, but overall that's what he does. And you know, the quality of his passing yesterday, especially the one on the Mitrovic goal, was just brilliant.
You mentioned Mitrovic, James, Chris Sutton on Match of the Day was, you know, saying, he's a great player, because Chris Sutton was a sort of strong centre forward. As a strong centre forward yourself, do you respect him?
Certainly do. You don't really see too many of them about these days, do you? It's sort of a dying art, really. But if you look at him, he's got the lot. And when it all comes together like it did yesterday for him, Steve McLaren is someone that can get the best out of him. And I think the Newcastle fans love a typical centre-forward, especially an old-fashioned one. So he's got the base and certainly the environment to do extremely well there.
It's the derby next weekend, as you said. Sunderland lost in Big Sam's first game. Big Sam was very upset about it, Julien, about the goal. What did you make of it? And Pantelimon sort of delayed complaints. The ball's gone and he's given it, but they keep his house to run and shake his arms. And because he's so enormous, sort of looks a bit like a monster out of Scooby-Doo, didn't it? Sort of flapping away.
I just think he would need a bit of time for Sam to, you know, to get his message across and everything. The problem is he's got no time, because if they don't win it next weekend, in what's the biggest game so far in their season, you know, it's going to get even more gloom and it's not what he needs. So I hope for him that he can get things sorted by next weekend to get a result there. But it just looks so poor to me. Whether I'm not even sure, you know, whoever would be the manager, it could be James, it could be you, it could be Matt. I'm just not sure they've got enough in them to do much, much better than what they're doing right now, I think.
Matt, if I gave you the job and said, you know, don't turn off at London Colney, keep on driving to Sunderland, would you want the job?
Not at the moment. They'd have to pay me a lot of money, which is probably why they got Sam Allardyce. It's a tough job. They've been kind of the fourth worst team in the Premier League for the last 4 or 5 years, it seems, and they've got out of it by having really good late runs towards the end of the season. Obviously, Sam's come in much earlier than Gus Poyet and Di Canio did, for example. So they've got more opportunities to build something. I think they're going to have to be scrabbling around for the odd result until January, and then I expect Sam to get quite busy in the transfer market.
Let's go to Goodison. Obviously a pretty emotional day after the news of the death of Howard Kendall in the morning, on Saturday morning. He was a brilliant manager, and what he achieved at Everton, James, in the 80s was extraordinary, wasn't it?
They had a fantastic side. I was actually at Wembley as a kid to watch them. Is it 84, I think, when they beat Watford 2-0? And that was the start, really, when they had 3 or 4 years when they were probably the best team in the country, even better than the good Liverpool side in the mid-80s with some of the football they played. A former coach of mine, Adrian Heath at Coventry, used to talk about Howard all the time, you know, and I think he was a player's manager. You know, I think everybody, you know, you read the tributes coming over this weekend, even today, you know, I've read from Peter Reid, Graham Sharp, you know, they're all just, you know, so nice about him, really, and he's being an ex-Everton player as well. I think he'd be sorely missed.
Mm. I we spoke to, I had Graham Sharp on the Fantasy Football Club on Sky a few weeks ago, and he told a brilliant story about after they beat Rapid Vienna in the Cup Winners' Cup final, and they said, right, nobody's going out tonight. And he actually, they flew home, and him and Andy Gray went back to his house and watched the VHS of the game. And then the FA Cup final, I think 3 days later,
I think that was
Man United, 85. And they said, no one go out. And then they only found out about 20 years later that Howard Kendall and Peter Reid went on a massive tear off that evening, 3 days before the Cup final. It's almost a shame that Everton side, Julian, didn't get a chance to play in the European Cup after they won the league.
Yes, I think they probably would have, you know, added more silverware to English clubs who were dominating, you know, European football at that time. You know, obviously Aston Villa won the European Cup at the time, Liverpool, you know, and then there was the ban, and I think that surely slowed down Everton progression as well, as you know, as a club overall, because you know, if winning the European Cup, which they potentially could have done, could have changed the whole dynamic as well, especially in their rivalry with Liverpool as well. And then it's something that surely must be a big regret over there, and you know, for Kendall as well.
They just played some great football, didn't they? Even I remember Gary Lineker's season there with Stephen on the right, Sheedy on the left. Great style about them, you know. And I think he really encapsulated that football club in that time. And you know, they've never, you know, been able to have that success again. Will they be able to win the league and you know, conquer Europe like they did? Unfortunately, it wasn't the European Cup at the time. But for that sort of 4 or 5 years, you know, what a team they had.
Julien, back onto the game itself. Last time I was here, Julien, you said that Louis van Gaal was a fraud.
Yes, I did.
Do you stand by that?
I haven't seen much progression from United, to be honest. And yes, they won, and you know, the performance was not bad. But that came after the Arsenal game, where I think his choices tactically were disgusting. You know, and I'm not saying that because he's French, but Morgan Schneiderlin starting not being used even at Arsenal, not even 1 second, was for me baffling. And the fact that he started at Everton, and I expect him to start against City as well in the derby next weekend, and score that first goal, showed how important I think he is in that team. And him and Schweinsteiger, I think, work well, because Schweinsteiger's legs are still in Germany, I think, but the mind and the vision and the touch is still there. And Schneiderlin is happy to run for two, there's no problem about that. And Schweinsteiger then can, you know, can dictate the pace of the game and use the ball the way he did it against Everton, for example. But I'm still waiting a bit for more from United and from Van Gaal, to be fair.
Well, it's actually funny, because Schneiderlin had a 97% pass completion rate from the game, which is staggering, really.
But was he just passing it sideways, or was he actually doing things?
I think he just passed it to his mate, and he was a yard away.
Yeah.
You know, that was, I saw that fact this morning. I thought, wow, that's, you know, what's that? Probably one mislaid pass out of maybe 40, 45 passes, really. Actually spoke to a few of the United people. That actually was Manchester United's best performance of the season, a few people are saying. You know, the weekend is a massive game coming up against City. You know, they just seem to teeter on the brink, Man United, and you think, here they are, and then all of a sudden they dip, like the Arsenal game. I was at the game myself, and, you know, extremely poor that day. Extremely poor, so...
But do you think that Schneiderlin brings that sort of solidity defensively to break down the attacks when he's not there, when it's Carrick and Schweinsteiger? They don't really put the shift off going in.
Well, exactly. That was the reason why he was brought in, really, for the big games, like when you go to Arsenal. So he protects that back four. They've struggled defensively in the last couple of seasons. They haven't had that midfield enforcer for a long, long time. They've got it in him now, which has played well. Some of the games at home, possibly you can understand why he'd play more attacking players, but for him to leave out against Arsenal was baffling, really.
I'm not one to use clichés, Matt, but it's a sign of a good team when they, you know, are there or thereabouts at the top of the table without really playing that well.
So people say. I was amazed by United last year. I saw them so many times. They were awful. And yet they still managed to finish in the top four. This season again, when I see them, have been poor. At Southampton, they were poor, but won. Arsenal, they were dreadful and lost 3-0. I think the thing we don't forget is they've got good players who can score goals from nowhere. And on Saturday, they did score three good goals, so... While I'm with Jules to an extent, and I'm not sure Van Gaal has developed a coherent philosophy and knows his best team and really knows what he's doing, they will still probably have more than enough to win most games, because Mata will do something. Martial has had a great impact. Rooney could come back to form. However, they've got a big test on Sunday, and I think this is Sheffield to be one of the most important games of the season so far, really, the Manchester derby. City look so good. I think for United to kind of really believe they can be in the title race, then they need to get something on Sunday. So it'll be interesting to see how Van Gaal approaches it.
I mean, in fairness to Van Gaal, he made Martial defend, which is pretty special because he played him on that left-hand side, which, you know, so far he's always played him, you know, up front. And he actually, you know, trailed back and defended on Coleman, which is something he never did in France. There was that game with Monaco where he came on as a sub and Jardim took him off after 20 minutes after being on as a sub because he was not defending enough.
He was not working hard enough,
you know, and it's just, I think at that level, and maybe he goes because he's at United now and he knows he can't afford not to defend because he's going to get slaughtered otherwise. But in fairness, you know, they're really getting the best out of him, even defending, which he never used to do before.
He's a young kid, isn't he? Yeah. He probably doesn't really know how to defend. He's probably played all his, you know, coming through the youth ranks at Lyon, he's just been an out-and-out forward, and someone said, you got to defend, and he's, well, what do you mean I've got to defend?
Did you ever get subbed, coming on as a sub, James?
I'm sure I did. Did I? I don't know, but it is the ultimate insult. If you come on as a sub and you come off as a, there's not much worse as a footballer.
Let's talk about Manchester City. Oh, no, I should quickly say, is Wayne Rooney back to his best, James?
Well, time will tell. I think it's you know, it's a big month now coming up for Rooney. You know, the fixtures with the Champions League coming up. He has been, I've seen a lot of Manchester United so far this season, and he's a great, great player, Wayne Rooney, but he has been way, way off form, way off form for Manchester United, and they need to get him back firing, because if they are going to challenge for the title, they need an out-and-out centre-forward who can take the mantle on, which he is more than capable of. You know, maybe it'll do his confidence a little bit good. It was a good finish, good goal, but only time will tell.
Hey, Tim Howard just dived out the way, didn't he?
He did, actually, yeah.
So the derby next weekend. That's a great day of football, that, isn't it? Are they both on the same day, Newcastle, Sunderland and Man City, Man United? That is a super Sunday, if ever there was one. City 5, Bournemouth 1. Actually, could City have been down to 10 men in that game? An Otamendi foul, Bournemouth player that was running through early in the game, Julien.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tight one. I think it's one of those that you could see it given, and you know, you're not also too outraged if it's not given. But I thought Bournemouth played well. I'm a big fan of Bournemouth. I know you're going there today, and you're gonna find a really lovely club. And I'm a big fan, and I really think they're gonna stay up, and I hope they do. And I think Eddie Howe is brilliant. And I like Raheem Sterling in the centre. And that's the thing, you know. And obviously, when David Silva is there, you can't play Raheem Sterling in the centre because Silva plays there, and fair enough. But I just think he's so good when he plays like that. You know, when he has De Bruyne on his left and Navas on his right, he plays off a striker. I think that's his best position. And yeah, he could have scored maybe 10 goals.
I think he's a good player, Raheem Sterling. And a lot of people looked at the fee, didn't they, in the summer, thought, oh, that's a bit. But I think, you know, with the money that's going to come in next season as well, you're going to see £40 million for a youngster as a standard fee. And I think over time, he'll be a good signing for Manchester City. You know, it's a great, great day for him at the weekend, wasn't it? Scoring, you know, his hat-trick. And, yeah, you know, I think he can be a key player for Manchester City. It's, you know, how much will they miss Aguero on Sunday? Yeah. You know, I think that's the big, big feat for them. Maybe David Silva might not be back either.
So you're not convinced by Boney?
He's not Aguero, is he?
No, he's not. True.
Not that it's relevant to anyone listening, but just for 1 minute there, the lights were dimmed down as if James Scowcroft was going into Love Hour or something. We're going to pay some power ballads. Is Raheem Sterling has taken over from Aaron Lennon as the best footballer who can't seem to kick it? Does anyone agree
with
that? Well, you know what I mean? I sort of look at those players. I'm not actually sure that he could lump it 50 yards, Raheem Sterling.
It's not the modern day game now, is it?
Why would he need to?
I mean, I come from an old school Cambridge United era where you need a channel ball, you need a fullback to launch it. How do you see that game going then next week, City United?
I think it's fascinating. I do think that United have that capacity of being left exposed. You know, whether Schneider and we're talking about starts or not, I think they're still yet to find a balance between going forward and defending. But I think cities are exactly the same. There's that thing when they struggle to defend at time, and Bournemouth, I thought on Saturday, you know, especially in that first half, got to the City box pretty quickly and pretty easily at times, you know, and we saw that on the Glenn Murray goal, for example. Three passes and off, they were already in front of that box, and you know, and took his goal very well. But so I think there'll be that. I think it's one game where you could see easily, you know, a lot of goals, like a 3-2 or 3-all game, and I think it's going to be fascinating. But for United to show their title credential, which for me are not there yet, they'll have to show that they can win those kind of games.
Matt Hughes, anything you want to add on Manchester City?
I think Vincent Kompany should be back and stay to the obvious side, but he will make a massive difference, look like a different team with him in it. I don't think they're going to falter without him and Aguero much of the season. Sterling, in a way, his excellence has sort of enable them to kind of minimise it off of Aguero. I'm not a huge Ole fan either, but him having scored twice the weekend should be good for his confidence and maybe can help him reduce his Swansea form. But I think a draw would not be a bad shout on Sunday for the betting man.
Matt, update us. How close are you to the Arsenal training ground now?
I'll be there very close, Junction 21, 10 minutes.
Oh, how exciting. Well, let's talk about Arsenal since you're almost there, Matt. 3-0 at Watford, and basically, as long as they kept it tight, because Watford don't score a lot of goals, they were always going to nick one or two, weren't they?
Yeah, I thought so. Wasn't a great first half, but in the second half, Arsenal were too good for them. But it's a huge step up tomorrow against Bayern, who are playing the best football in Europe at the moment, I think, really. They're the only one of the sort of super clubs that are actually doing it domestically at the moment. They'll want to come to London and knock Arsenal out of the competition as they can do every year. So it'll be a big test for Arsenal. They can match them for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Can they match them for 90 when the pressure's on? That's the question. So they're going to have to defend really, really well and take their chances. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be one of the best Champions League game of the competition so far. It's your English club, I think. It should be great.
Julien, are you looking forward more to Arsenal-Bayern or to when Matt arrives and comes off hands-free and we can hear him slightly better?
When Matt arrives. I'm scared he's going to get into an accident or something, a car crash, because he's too focused on the podcast. So I just want him safe.
Stay safe, Matt. Arsenal 3-0, you happy with that, Julien?
Yes. I thought they controlled the game in the first half despite the little scare on that Igalo chance, and after that, when they start playing together, Cazorla, Ozil and Sanchez, like they did on that first goal, I think they're just brilliant and at times unstoppable, and I think he's good. The Koscielny being there back from that little injury he had against Olympiacos, I think is a massive boost, especially for tomorrow. I think he's a wonderful player, and I was lucky to interview him for the Arsenal magazine, and he said that great story that he does the Rabona amazingly well. It's the best I've ever seen anyone doing it. But he can only do it with his left foot, which is his wrong foot. He's right-footed. He can only do the Rabona, which is already, pretty good skill, only with his wrong foot. And I said, he comes from another planet.
What's the point of the Rabona, really, though? I mean, where's...
To
when you can have a side-foot pass?
To impress the girls, I think.
James,
I would have gone down with John Beck.
Can you do, the Rabona?
Was there a Rabona in your locker, James?
I could probably get about 3 yards and maybe hit that wall.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm just so fearful of breaking your ankle.
Do you teach the kids to do a Rabona? Or you say, like, no, use your other foot.
If you see a Rabona in the academy, what's your... Do you take them, give them a dressing down?
Great, I like that. Good, that's the kind of football we should be promoting.
How do you see Arsenal v Bayern then?
Tough game. I don't think it's beyond Arsenal to get something from the game. But like you say, I think they're playing probably the best team in Europe at the moment. And that will be a big, big test. Going forward, I don't think Arsenal, the three players you mentioned just a minute ago, fantastic on the ball. It's, people like Per Mertesacker, the pace at the back, if they really do get exposed, Arsenal. And it's a game they've got to go and win, really, haven't they?
And any chance of Arsene Wenger being so stubborn that he keeps Ospina in goal?
No, he's injured, I think.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, shows what I know, doesn't it? what are you going to check with Arsene Wenger then, Matt, when you arrive? Anything apart from the Ospina thing? Since he's injured, then check plays.
Yeah, check will definitely play. Being slightly facetious earlier. It's all about belief and concentration of Arsenal. I think if we look back at last season and then the Monaco defeat, particularly, is a huge waste of opportunity. So the question is, what if players have learned from that, and if they can maintain their performance and concentration against the best European teams for the duration of the game. I remember seeing for Mertesacker before the Monaco second leg last year in the knockout stages. He was kind of admitting that, you know, their minds wandered, they didn't concentrate, which, regardless of the European World Cup, seems an extraordinary admission. And there seems to be a sense around Arsenal that they are just a little bit, very gifted, but a little bit soft, and the going gets tough and under pressure, they cave. So it'll be a good test tomorrow to see if that changes.
Just before we talk about West Ham, Leicester and Crystal Palace, breaking news, Leeds United have sacked Uwe Rosler. Does anyone have an opinion on this thrown at them straight away?
It's bizarre, isn't it? Is it Steve Evans who's going to take over?
Taking
the ex-Rotherham manager.
It's that Chelino and Evans, an amazing partnership at any football club.
It's just unstable, isn't it, Leeds United? Is it his fifth manager, I believe? Not won a home game since March, Leeds.
Well, good luck if you're a Leeds fan. Basically, life is either one of two things, isn't it? It's either great or it's a great story for later, right? And this for Leeds fans now is a great story for later, but right now it really isn't great. Let's talk about 4th, 5th and 6th in the Premier League at West Ham, Leicester and Crystal Palace. I don't think anyone would anyone have predicted any of that at the start of the season?
No, I think maybe you'd have tipped Crystal Palace to be, you know, maybe up there. Leicester are the surprise. It just carried on Leicester from last season, didn't they? And Jamie Vardy, they've got a goal scorer extraordinaire, really. So, and West Ham have done exceptionally well, really, to change manager, bring new players in, and to get it going as well. You know, they look a good outfit, West Ham.
Because a lot of people were saying, actually, you should keep Big Sam for this last year before you move to the Olympic Stadium, because you just can't afford to be in the Championship next year. And then West Ham had, like, sort of 20 players sent off in every European game that they played in. And then everyone thought, this is going to be an absolute disaster. But Bilic looks like he's doing the right thing.
I think so. I really like him. I like what he's doing. And he was instrumental, for example, in signing Payet, who had a big chat with him, not sure in what language, but... because obviously Payet's English is not great, and Bilic was like, yeah, come with me, I promise you we're going to play good football, you're going to have fun, and we're going to win. And that's exactly what's happening, and for that I think he deserves a lot of credit. The blessing in this guy was that elimination in the Europa League qualifiers, because I'm not sure they would be where they are now if they had to play every Sunday and every Thursday and every Sunday and every Thursday with the squad they have, which is a good squad but doesn't have the depth to play well, especially if they are, you know, maybe falling in a very good group in the Europa League. So what I think it was the best thing that could have happened to them this season so far is to be knocked out.
Good win at Crystal Palace. What was Dwight Gayle doing, James? Have you ever been like that? Have you ever done that in your career? Two silly bookings in the first half?
I have done that, yes.
Did you get told off?
Yes.
2 weeks' wages?
I don't think 2 weeks, no. I was actually playing for Crystal Palace when that happened as well. So I feel for him. I just think if you get booked, you're on a massive tightrope then for the rest of the game, and you've got to be so careful what you do. I do think it's harsh. Did it change the outcome of the game? Possibly. Hey, you just got to learn from it.
You know, I think tackling is a skill. It's like we first talked about the Rabona, but tackling is a skill. Not everybody can tackle properly. I mean, you know, and especially not a striker. You know, I think defenders learn to do it. I think some midfielders can do it as well. Not everybody can do it. And I can't see why a striker is like him. We try to tackle people.
The problem is now, Julian, the problem is 10 years ago it wouldn't have been a problem, but if you are a millisecond late, you're going to get a yellow card. And it's harsh, really, because if you look at it, you know, players want to tackle, the managers want their players to tackle, the supporters want their players to tackle, and for some unknown reason, the referees, whoever make the rules up, are trying to, you know, get it out of the game, really. Why? You know, I don't understand. Yeah, the two-foot tackle from behind, I totally understand that, but... you know, he was just fractionally late on the lad.
Yeah.
But he did turn on his toe, which does hurt awfully, doesn't it?
It does hurt, yeah.
Matt, I quite enjoyed the fact that Dwight Gayle encroached in the penalty that Kabai put away and then encroached again in exactly the same way, but the ref just couldn't quite bring himself to say... And it was like the ref was standing... He should have gone to the other side at least, because he just sort of ran straight in front of his path twice.
Yeah, it's a great thing about football and many sports, really. Rules are rules, except when it looks a bit embarrassing and I can't be bothered to apply them properly. It would have been hilarious if he made to take it a third time. And you wonder how many penalties does Kabay blast on the middle before he puts it somewhere else. Being bemused by Pardew, actually. I know you've got to defend your players, but for him to complain about the sending off seemed bizarre. There are two clear if you ever see, if you ask me.
The chances are, if he hadn't given the goal with that penalty, he could still be taking it, because Dwight Gale would still be encroaching. It could still actually be happening on a Monday morning. Let's talk about Leicester. Another brilliant comeback. What is it, James, about some teams that just... You see some teams when they're losing and you just go, they're going to lose. And then others. And Leicester, this is not the first time they've come back this season. It's very impressive, isn't it?
It is impressive. It's not just once, like you say. It's happened. I think there's a couple of things. Belief is a massive part, but also having a goal scorer in your team that if you keep asking questions of the opposition, he'll get on the end of it and score. And, you know, you have to say, Jamie Vardy at the moment, 9 goals, you know, well ahead of any other English centre-forward in the Premier League. It's impressive stuff.
Julien?
I mean, I think the lesson for Ranieri is just start Riyad Mahrez every single game. Why on earth did you think it was a good idea to leave him on the bench? I can't believe it. He's one of the best players in this league so far this season, and you leave him on the bench. It just made no sense. And you know, and obviously he comes on at half time and changes the game for you, because he's that, you know, he's so good right now, he's so on fire.
Maybe it's a mindset of the first half and the game is a little bit cagey, he's not going to give you a lot running back. It could defensively cost us. When the game opens up in the second half, that's when he can come in. But
he was almost too late in a way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they could have almost lost the game already, and you know, but I think he's so important for them.
Finally, let's talk about Jurgen Klopp's arrival in the Premier League at Spurs. 0-0, but not a bad game, Julien, was it?
No, I thought it was good. But I love people in this country expecting Klopp to, you know, arrive and 3 days later having Liverpool playing like Dortmund when they won the double. One, it's not the same players. There's no Lewandowski. There's no Hummels at his best. You know, it's Sacco and Origi playing up front. So it's, you know, it's not the same. Just give the guy a bit of time before, you know, starting to compare with what he did at Dortmund. But I thought for a first game, you know, I don't think they did too bad.
A lot's been made of the fact that this is the first time that Tottenham have been outrun in a game, and it's the most that Liverpool have run, I think. Not being a football manager, James, seems like a good idea to tell your players to run around.
It's not a bad idea, is it?
No.
I think you often find that, especially when a new manager comes in and, you know, everyone, you know, has to lift their game maybe by 10-20%. Can they keep it going? I think you've got to be careful against some opposition in the Premier League if you want to press and play a high-energy game, that some players are so good they'll pass around you and, you know, get your back four very, very quickly. Can he improve the group of players that he's got? Possibly, but to the extent that they can get in the top four, I'm not sure. It's all going to be down to how well he does in the transfer market for me.
Matt, who out of Spurs and Liverpool excites you the most?
I think Tottenham have got more potential in the short term. I like what he's done with the age of the squad and sort of promoting the younger English players, and he's done interesting things with giving Mason and Eric Dyer opportunities. I think they're probably both a little bit short for the top four, but if Chelsea don't improve and there's no sign of them getting dramatically better, to be honest, then there could be an opening for Tottenham to sneak in.
You've arrived, Matt.
I've parked, yes.
You're safe.
You can actually hear me.
Many congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Some scary moments, pretty desperate driving from some of my fellow commuters, but I got there in the end.
I think it's important to say that we encourage safe driving here at the Times, don't we?
Sponsored by the AA, aren't we?
Do you know, it's lucky you mentioned Chelsea, because I didn't even have them written down on my running order. I don't know what that says, apart from my sort of lack of preparation, but what did you make, Junior, of their victory over Aston Villa?
Not much. The whole thing for me is the Hazard situation, and I don't know why. I'm not a manager, and James probably, you know,
I'm not a manager
better,
either.
No, but better position to mention it. It doesn't make any sense for me. It's a game that, you know, you're going to win because Villa are so bad. Why would you put him on the bench like that? Humiliate him the way he did, and then after the game, you know, adding, oh, he doesn't work hard enough. He's one of the best players in the world. Yes, the start of the season hasn't been great, but that was the perfect game for him to, you know, maybe find his feet again, maybe, you know, score a couple of goals, do a bit of assist, and just, you know, giving that boost of confidence that is clearly needed with Chelsea. And no, you put him on the bench, you bring him on like 83rd minute, I think it was, which, you know, makes no sense. And then after the game, you add some more and more and more. I don't understand it. And I feel a bit for Hazard, I have to say, because yes, it was not his best so far, but it was not the only one. And maybe it doesn't work a lot defensively, but not those Cristiano or Messi or, you know, players like that. And that those are players in his league, you know, and I don't know, I feel bad for him.
Surprising that he's criticised him in public. That's everybody gets dropped, even though he's a good player. He hasn't had a great season. He hasn't had the season that he had last season. He hasn't been on top of his game. But to come out in the press and publicly criticise him is just going to leave a, you know, bad blood between the manager and one of his better players, who he needs to get going and needs him to get his team up the
table. Did you ever have that, James? Did you ever have a gaffer admonish you in public?
Yes, I did, yes.
Oh, who?
Mr. Warnock.
Really? What did he say?
I think it's a similar thing, really. I think he called me lazy, needs to work harder, this, that and the other, and I just got a winning goal, and it was a little bit harsh. I pulled him on Monday and he said, oh, no, it's all taken out of context and this, that and the other. But
do you still hate him?
No, not at all. Not at all. Far from it.
Matt, Chelsea, what's going to happen to them? I mean, the funny thing is, they're 11th, 11 points. If they win three in a row, they're right in the top four.
Yeah, I think they still will probably get in the top four, but I think they're not going to win the league, and it's not a given that they will improve, because on Saturday they beat Villa, but they weren't great, and the two goals came from defensive mistakes. Other than that, they didn't create a lot, really, and there's a lot of problems there, and I'm not sure how he can solve them, because basically the team have got old. Some players are out of form.
Is he the problem, Matt?
They've, I don't think he is the problem. I think he's part of the problem. I think his man management, when things go badly, is an issue. As Julian was saying, with reference to Eden Hazard, but it's not just Hazard. He's been really critical of Nemanja Matic. He criticised Ruben Loftus-Cheek on Saturday. He started him out of position at a 10. I thought he'd played well, but he hooked him at half-time for not working hard enough defensively when he was playing at number 10. And then criticised him afterwards. I thought that was extraordinary. Mourinho's management is great when things are going well, and lots of players like Frank Lampard will tell you about how he made them feel amazing and really special, boosted their confidence. However, when things are going badly, he does the opposite, and he seems to bring them down, because of that reason he's struggling to lift things. So I think it's going to be a difficult season for him.
Who's the better manager out of Jose and Tim Sherwood?
Well, I don't think that's even requires an answer, is it, that question?
But how do we think Tim Sherwood's doing at Aston Villa? He's having a terrible time, isn't he, really?
He is. I mean, I'm just waiting for his press conference all week to see if he's going to speak about himself in the third person or not. And he did on Friday, and I was so happy. And I was, yes. Because, you know, it's important to win for the club, for Tim Sherwood, for the players. I was like, why? Why are you doing this to yourself? I think the recruitment was not bad compared to what some people are saying. And I think he had a part to play in the recruitment. I just don't think that tactically is good enough. Full stop.
I think it's a difficult club, isn't it? It's a big club where expectations and reality probably, you know, similar to Newcastle, Sunderland. Whoever comes in, can they do a better job? I think it's one of those. Maybe you can come in and get a spark out of the players, a bit of a different voice. But ultimately, at the moment, Aston Villa, you know, every season, going into every Premier League season, are fighting to stay up.
Now, yesterday there was an exciting Euro draw, and I almost prefer draws to the actual football themselves. Sadly, it was quite a short one, but the nice bald chap, Infantino, is that his name?
Yeah.
He didn't have a... Normally, there's a glamorous assistant in a ball gown. Not a bald gown. I don't know what that is. And there's a whole fanfare. They did make the balls quite hard to unscrew. So I'm not sure who the ex-pro...
Dominique Rostro?
Oh, I don't know who that...
Come on. The Green Angel.
Keep going.
PSG legend, France legend, Saint-Etienne legend as well. Okay. Played in the European Cup final with Saint-Etienne. They lost against Bayern Munich and stuff like that. Great player.
It's important for me to show
My dad as well.
Oh, that's important as well. It's important for me to show a lack of knowledge of European football whenever I do a podcast for this or other newspapers, just so the comments below the line reinforce how truly lowbrow I am. But what do we make of the... What do we make? First of all, Ireland, Bosnia-Herzegovina, first leg in Bosnia. What do we give the Irish chances?
I think it was the worst draw they could get, really, Bosnia. I think that of those teams there, apart from maybe Sweden, just because of Ibra, but I think the rest of Sweden is actually not that good. I think that was the worst draw they could get. Bosnia with Pjanic, seeing as Pjanic is playing right now with Roma. He scored a lovely free kick on Saturday against Empoli as well. Edin Dzeko, for example, as well, who, you know, was injured, didn't really play in the last two games for them. But
he's got a great record, hasn't he, Dzeko, yeah, for Bosnia.
And he's back to fitness now. He was on the bench on Saturday as well. So I just think he's the worst draw possible in those teams there. But, you know, over two games, again, as we always say in that cliche, everything is possible. But I think they would have to play really, really well, Ireland, to go through.
Ukraine play Slovenia. Sweden face Denmark. An exciting Scandinavian derby. And Norway take on Hungary. Matt, who's going to get through?
You think Sweden would beat Denmark, mainly just because of the Zlatan factor, having missed out of the World Cup. This, I guess, could be his last major tournament, so he'll be desperate to get there. Hungary weren't great in the Northern Ireland Irish group. Then again, Norway haven't been very good for a long time. I'm not sure who's going to win that one. I would guess Norway, and the other ties between
Ukraine and Slovenia. How could you forget?
Slovenia, impressive against England, scored goals. They've got a couple of very good players, but Ukraine is pretty difficult place to go, as they say. So that would be tough. I think I'd probably back Ukraine to get through over two legs.
Interestingly, Turkey qualified as the best third place team, and I was looking at this because they didn't get as many points as Ukraine or Norway, but UEFA does not count the results against the sixth place team in each group, leaving Turkey with the most. That's a weird rule, isn't it? I mean, everyone's got to play the useless team, so surely that's
not everybody has a useless team in their group, that's why.
Oh, is that
if you if you've got Gibraltar, no offense to Gibraltar, especially for loads of Gibraltarians who are listening to us, and if you are in a group with no small team, i.e. team that lose 4, 5, 6 every time, it's obviously, I think that's why they do it. Yeah,
I've changed my opinion.
That's cleared that up.
That has. Do you think there should be that pre-qualifying? Because actually, I'd quite like that group with Andorra, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, and Gibraltar. I think it'd be a really, really exciting group just to see them win some matches and know how to react
over a
when
weekend,
they won.
Couldn't they?
Like a six-a-side thing.
Hit the goals.
We could get Atomic Kitten to play and everything. It would be great, wouldn't it? I've got some questions. Leon has asked a question on Twitter. He says, can Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard work as a partnership at Euro 2016? He says, because when you think about it, one can sit and one can bomb on.
True.
It's an idea, isn't it? But he says a real question. Why have the big teams overlooked Payet and West Ham?
It's not that. I don't think that they've overlooked them. He's had very inconsistent seasons in France, and the last one with Marseille was really the first one where he was consistent from start to finish, which for a lot of big clubs, one season is not good enough, which I completely understand. At that age, because when you think about Martial, it's a bit different, but at that age, when you get to 27, 28, 29, etc., and it was still a lot of money for a player like him in a way, and I think that he's a very good talented player. But I want to see him doing it through the whole season. And so far, it's only the start of the season. He's looked good for West Ham, I have to say. And there's that issue with the national team as well in France that he's not picked. And a lot of people on Twitter have said to me, why? Surely France can do with Payet. Surely he's good enough. Yes, he is good enough. The problem is off the field. He hasn't been the greatest off the field. I think there's a lot of players in that national team don't get on with him and don't really want him there. And I think Deschamps went for a bit like the Nasri issue, where if I take him, that actually going to cause me more trouble than if I leave him at home, so may as well leave him home.
If he comes, if he's put in the squad, will it be like the Air France? Will he be running away and his shirt will be ripped off him by the workers?
It's not that bad, but one is they're playing a 4-3-3 formation that doesn't suit him because he needs to play behind the striker like he does at West Ham. So he'll be on the bench and he's one of those players on the bench that is not happy. So he's going to moan, he's going to sulk, he's going to complain, and Deschamps doesn't want any of this, so I can see why. I can understand why. You know where Deschamps is going from.
How well will France do?
I'm optimistic. I think we've got a very good squad. I think for players like the Pogba generation, Pogba, Varane, the kids born in 92-93. I think it's the right time. I think the World Cup was a bit early for them. They learned a lot from going to the quarterfinals, being knocked out by Germany the way they did, and I think they'll be ready for the Euros. Being at home is obviously a big advantage, and if Karim Benzema has the season that he's had so far, all the way through, Valbuena, Griezmann is in incredible form. I think if you look on paper, I think we have one of the best teams there and that we can definitely win it.
Well, England are going to win, aren't they? It's obvious. quick question from me to you chaps, and to you, Matt, in the car park in London Colney. I'm just about to go off to interview Jeff Mostyn, the Bournemouth chairman, for the Fantasy Football Club. I haven't done any research because I'm here doing this, so is there anything I should know about Bournemouth's ownership or any good questions I could ask him?
Well,
that's great. It'll be a fantastic interview. And when it's broadcast, you'll see quite how good it is. That's it for today. Thanks very much to my guest. Thank you, Matt Hughes, in the car park.
Pleasure.
Is there anything you want to add?
Not really. I'm just enjoying that pendant pause.
Well, let's hope they keep it in. Thank you, James Scowcroft.
Pleasure.
And thank you, Julien Leroy.
Merci.
Please press that subscribe button. And remember, you can get exclusive football, rugby and cricket highlights free as part of your subscription. Just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. Have a lovely day.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification and you're away.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.